All right, everybody, shalom, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are, and shalom, and welcome to our beloved Malka Fleischer. Shalom.
Thank you so much. Here I am.
Thank you very much for showing up on the show, Malka.
Yes, and, thanks for having me.
And today's show, I'm putting you on first.
Wow.
Because of the superior everything quality, but also the audio quality, since you and I are in the same room. And with Rabbi Mike, I'm not in the same room,
right.
So we're doing it on a Zoom type thing. It's actually called
so cool though.
StreamYard. It's
that
really
people
neat.
Can
yeah.
watch live.
Yeah, they watch it live.
And then
on
they can
Facebook.
Watch recordings.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. It's really cool stuff. Speaking of recording, today is an important day in recorded history.
Yes.
And today is the 17th of Tammuz. 17th of Tammuz. A lot of bad stuff happened on the 17th of Tammuz. The root of it is that today was the day that Moses was supposed to come down with the Ten Commandments, with the two tablets.
Right.
He came down with the two tablets. And this is after having given the initial Torah to the Jewish people on the 6th of Sivan. He went back up, was there for 40 days and 40 nights, and he came down on the 17th of Tammuz, and he was supposed to be a great day of teaching and rejoicing. But instead he shows up. What does he see? The golden calf.
Yeah, not good.
And that's the day also that Moses will chuck the Ten Commandments written in the finger of God.
Yep.
And so today is a fast day. That's the root of it. But there are other things that happened on this day, including basically the initial break into the walls of Jerusalem in both temples. The truth is that on the first temple, it happened a few days earlier, but the sages basically pushed off the commemoration of it until the 17th of Tammuz, because that's when it happened in the second temple. And other bad things, the Romans burning the Torah, and other things that happen on this day. It's a day of tshuva. It's a day that we have to repent for the sins. And think about it. It's a fast day. You and I are fasting
yes,
today.
That's right.
It's a fast
and
day.
And it's the beginning of the 3 weeks, which is
right.
the period leading up to the destruction of the two temples. And I got to be honest with you people. This is not my favorite time of year. It's it's considered an inauspicious time for the Jewish people these 3 weeks. And we minimize our joy. We minimize celebrations. I understand that Sephardi Jews do continue to engage in weddings right up until the nine days.
The week that
I think it's the 9 days.
Maybe.
I don't think they get married during the 9 days. But I think right up until the 9 days, they continue to get married and hold those kinds of celebrations. Whereas Ashkenazi Jews don't. You won't
right.
be attending, which happens to be great right now because coronavirus is flaring.
That's right.
Here in Israel and also in many places in the United States. So it's probably a good idea to stay home anyway. We also minimize things like listening to, we don't go to concerts, live music concerts, and even recorded music. A lot of people don't listen to like musical instruments during this period, instead choosing to listen to a cappella music, which happens to be permissible like
yeah.
all the way throughout. You can listen to
it's interesting.
The Mac Beats, which my kids really love, the Mac Beats, and there's many other different a cappella groups that sing, so you can listen to music during this like period of mourning, but also kind of this period of shame, like to add to the mourning, meaning to say it's not just like something happened to us, the destruction of our temples, but that we really screwed it up. And they say that in every generation, whichever generation does not rebuild the temple is as if they destroyed the temple or are responsible for the destruction of the temple. And that's us. Right. So
this is like a Hungarian type holiday.
It's very, very unpleasant. And I find tfu, 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 really, 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 really tfu,
you're not
tfu,
supposed
tfu.
To do tfu, tfu, tfu during the corona period.
This is a recorded tfu, tfu, tfu. It's
right.
totally sterile.
No tfu, tfus, everybody.
Yeah.
Do not tfu,
yeah,
tfu
don't
tfu. Yeah.
Anyway, tfu, tfu, tfu. This tends to be a period in which a lot of people get knocked around. This is the time when your car will get that flat tire, or you won't be able to find that $100 bill that you just knew was in your wallet, or you'll get in like a bad fight with somebody, or just all kinds of those like bad mazal, bad things happening. And God forbid that it should be anything worse. I would like to proudly announce that we've already kicked off our 3 weeks. here in this house, in that, like, we got up in the middle of the night to, you know, to eat before the beginning of the fast. And my almost 9-year-old came up to me and was like, my throat hurts. Now, throat hurting is not, that's pretty normal for childhood, except my son, Elazar, Shiyechieh, Ad Me'ev Esrim, he has had strep throat now 2 times in the last month, and he's gotten antibiotics for both those times. And now he's telling me that his throat hurts again. And I am like a real authentic Ashkenazi Jewish mother. And so I'm really worried that he's going to get like rheumatoid, whatever it's called, rheumatic fever, that he's going to get a heart valve problem, a kidney problem. I don't know if there's any people out there who've had this experience. You can email us. Please tell me that it's going to be okay, or tell me the truth, or whatever that you want to tell me.
My mom says, by the way, that in the Soviet Union, in Russia, they when you had strep, they test you at the beginning and at the end to make sure
It went away. They don't do that here.
Yeah, which
is
too bad.
And so here we are. Possibly, we haven't gotten it. We have, thank God, a doctor's appointment already today, but we haven't gotten a test yet, and I'm in a very already bad mood, courtesy of the beginning of the 3 weeks.
I think it's going to be okay, Bezrat Hashem. It's going to be fine. By the way, one of our chief of staff of Israel, the head of the army, almost went down in a chopper accident.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Basically, what happened was that the chopper went up from the Knesset, from our legislative body, and the chief of staff was there. And he's a good guy. Aviv Kochavi is a good guy. And he started flying up. One of the engines gave out. The pilots have a backup engine. They have to turn off the one engine and turn on the other engine. By mistake, they turned off the good engine. The thing started dropping.
That's really, really bad.
But what's awesome is within a second, they realized that,
the engine again, the good one.
The good engine. And
they were fine.
And they coasted home, no problem. But
That must have been a very scary 1 second. Yeah.
And they were like,
1.5 seconds.
They were like, 3 weeks, man.
Yeah.
Almost 3 weeks. Right.
Oh, the 3 weeks.
That's right, Malka. Speaking of the 3 weeks, you yourself had a little incident where you behaved like the Jews in the desert.
What?
Yes. You were at the supermarket.
Oh, yes.
And you yourself saw.
Right. I had a little epiphany at the grocery store, which is where I get most of my good thinking done. Anyway, so I was at the grocery store, and we have, like, here in our area, we basically have one big grocery store. There's lots of little, like, neighborhood ma-and-pa grocery stores, which jack up the prices because they're in your neighborhood and they figure they can get you. Like a bodega, you know, in, like, in one of these.
I think it's more because, you know, they have less staff and...
Right, they can't buy in bulk.
Right, so...
Right. Okay.
Give them the benefit.
You're right. Great. Here I go. Destroying the world some more in the 3 weeks. That's excellent.
Okay. Saying lashon hara about your neighbors, not a big deal. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Forget it. I quit.
No, go ahead. So what was your deep thought in the supermarket?
I was in the grocery store, and there's this one big grocery store, which means
Is that the right word, grocery store, as opposed to supermarket? Am I saying
it's the
something
same.
Wrong? Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Anyway, so I do all of our grocery shopping, with the exclusion of, like, every once in a while I need to get a milk or an eggs or a bread or something from the local place, which is so conveniently located near my house. But I do all the big shopping at this one store every week. And this store, okay, so I grew up in America. And in America, one of the things that's so American is that they're always coming out with, like, a new version of something, a better recipe of something, a new flavor of something, a new color of something, right? And that's how they keep you,
right,
like, buying new stuff all the time.
Right. The thing I always noticed in America, and I was an immigrant, and then later on as a person who's traveled to America, I always noticed that the toothbrush.
Right.
The toothbrush,
it's like, it's got this bristle and that bristle.
I'm always like, at the end, what we're talking about is bristles on a stick.
Right.
Like, and that's really what we're talking
about
here, right?
To brush your teeth.
And yet they manage to make the Reach toothbrush and the spinning toothbrush
and the brands and everything.
And this one's got charcoal on it, and this one's got, you know, this one, it's got these kind of teeth, these bristles face this way, but also this way.
Right, exactly.
And I was like, America, you are so funny.
Right. So on the one hand, it can be annoying, especially because so often, like, things are a limited edition, and then you, like, liked something, and then you can only get it, like, for 3 months out of your entire life because they never bring it back.
Right.
So anyway, So that's how I grew up in America, with like always something new to try, something new to taste, something new to buy, right? In Israel, it's way less like that, way less like that. And at the groceries, it's, you do have brands who are trying to get a new thing every once in a while and stuff like that. But especially maybe it's just our grocery store. I don't know. It's like a lot of the same stuff all the time.
Right.
And I was in the grocery store buying our stuff, and I was like, I'm always buying the same stuff. This is so boring. I just like, I know that like food is not per se, and like it's not a good way to have a new experience exactly. Like, we should be having new experiences that are like living experiences as opposed to like food experiences. But I was just like, I just want to like buy something new or have a different flavor or have a different something. Like, just bring something different into the house instead of the same old thing every single week. And then I was like, this is exactly the kind of complaining that they did. I think I was in the frozen food section when this happened. I was like, this is exactly the same complaining that they must have done in the desert when they were getting the manna. They got this man. It's totally miraculous. They're out in the desert. They like should definitely die, right? Because they're out in the desert. There's nothing to sustain them out there. But God is personally like spoon feeding them this stuff and is like, this is my perfect food that I personally engineered up in heaven.
It's a superfood.
Right? It's like it's got everything you need, all the food groups. And they're like, I don't want this. I'm tired of this. And I was like, here I go. I'm in a grocery store with really thousands of different foods and different options, but like I'm annoyed, right? Because I can't get like a new snackadoo, something that's like, you know, a special little interesting thing that's gonna like perk my interest and be different,
right?
Right. And so then I was laughing at myself slash ashamed slash interested
slash thinking though
slash being- still dealing with it, meaning to say, like, even that once I had the realization, I still had to, it didn't like eviscerate my annoyance,
right?
I was still like micro annoyed,
right?
And I was still wishing for something different, but then right. I had the tools to fight it a little bit,
right? That's a very important point, that last point. You know, a lot of times you can't kill off your, let's call them, wanton desires or your bad traits. You can't kill them off, but you can mitigate them by having these realizations, and the Torah gives us that those kelim, those tools, and you remember the people in the desert, and then you had that moment, and you came home, and you told me the story, which I thought was very beautiful, and immediately I thought, this would make great radio,
right?
Okay? But the point is that it really actually is a beautiful story, really, about how the Torah, first thing, it's a story about the Torah, how the Torah's tales that you read sometimes, and you're like, why would they complain about the manna? And you catch yourself.
Yeah, you're just like, they were so dumb.
Right.
How could they look at this gift horse in the mouth?
Right.
How could they be like, I'm tired of this? They must have been the most spoiled people in the world.
Right. Here
and
you are.
And then, thousands of years later, Malka Fleischer
is in
the grocery store,
grocery
in the land of Israel.
In Judea.
In Judea. Liberated Judea. Not being hunted, ostensibly, by evil people. Raising the kids in the Hebrew language. Steps away from Jerusalem, and I'm like, these chips are the same chips I buy all the time. I want a new chips. So there you go. It's real, people.
But on the other hand, I do want to say that just to the other side of the story, the human side of the story, is that there is a supermarket that you like to go to from time to time.
Right. There's one in Jerusalem. That I like. It's called Osher Ad.
Well, Osher Ad.
It's a great grocery store. And I thought about going there, but it's such a schlep.
It's not such a schlep.
Well, it is. I'll tell you why. Because you have to drive into Jerusalem. Then you have to go through the traffic, which you know is the bane of my life. Then I have to get parking. Then you have to go in. So you have to first get there, which is hard in the traffic. And people are mad and they're honking you.
It sounds like you really should reconsider going back to Egypt, maybe.
Okay? Yeah, where's the eggplants?
Yeah, that's where's the leeks? Okay, where's the onions?
Yeah.
And the melons? So it is a blessing to go. And I really want to bless you, on the one hand, to keep having these deep thoughts and realizations. But on the other hand, like manage that feeling in two ways. One, thank you, Hashem, for everything.
That's
thank
right.
you for the incredible... incredible miracle of shopping at a supermarket in Judea,
right?
In liberated Judea, in the land of Israel. Wow, wow, wow.
Right. It's an absolute miracle.
And on the other hand, so that's...
And that there's more than like three foods, by the
way. Right. There's
incidentally, in the 1950s here in Israel, it was something called tzena, which meant there was very little food.
Right.
And I remember a story that our friend Tamar Yona, who we used to work with at Israel National Radio, told a story about how I think her parents or somebody's parents came to Israel and they went to a neighbor's house and while they to borrow something or to ask for something. And while they were walking, like while they were knocking on the door, they were eating a tomato, like a whole tomato. And the neighbor was like in shock because tomatoes were so expensive. Nobody had a tomato. And if you had a tomato, you were like chopping it up into pieces. You were making it into like a special Shabbos food. Everyone got some of it, right? And that this person was like eating a tomato. Now it's like the whole thing is full of tomatoes and cucumbers and every kind of food and 10 kinds of different meat that I buy and different versions of rice and different versions of pasta and all kinds of like cool products that you knew from America. The Heinz ketchup, the Doritos, Oreos, you know, every kind of ice cream, everything that you want. And that we're still like not satisfied. Me. I'm talking about me now. I have sinned before you all.
It is a virtual cornucopia, and Baruch Hashem, big Baruch Hashem for this time of plenty, this time of Shefa.
Yes.
At the same time, so that one way of dealing with it is to realize these
realizations. Realize what you have.
But on the other hand, it's also mutar for you within the world of mutar, within the world of allowance, what is allowed. For you to go to Yerushalayim?
The other grocery store.
Right, the other grocery store. And enjoy it. And don't worry about it. Brave the traffic and have fun. Meaning to say, so you got to find the outlets for the things that your soul needs. On the one hand, you know, talk to your soul and tell it, you know, to be so thankful. On the other hand, okay, if there's another kosher option to do, which is to take a little trip to Oshirad once a month, so do it. You know what I mean? B'simcha rabba. With great joy. Okay, great. So that's a good thing. Speaking of that, Malka, speaking of your plenty of blessings, plenty o blessings.
Yes.
I do want to recommend that people join, get their own plenty o blessings through going to this website and buying your own wine from the land of Israel, which is Isra Wines.
Don't wine.
Isra Wines, that's
drink
right.
Drink Isra Wine.
IsraWines.com or was it IsraWines.org? I think it was IsraWines.com.
I think so.
Isra Wines, and the coupon code is Yishai.
Nice.
Shall give you 10% off.
Nice.
And you shall buy a wine from the land of Israel. Enjoy it with your family and friends. Bless the time that we're living in and be blessed by it by having the flow of the waters and grapes of the land of Israel. And the Jewish people's hard efforts, part of who you are, inside your brain. Drink a cup of wine and then stand on your head. Don't do that. Not immediately. But that's Israel Wines and a coupon code Yishai. So check that out and let me know if that works for you, by the way. I want to hear from you a report on how that worked, if that company did well for you or not. I want to hear how the stuff came in. So give me, like, I want some feedback here to see if it like, indeed, you know, we're advertising a company that's working well for you. Okay, I'm on your side here. So let me know if that worked well for you. I'm excited about that. And also, right now, I'm still wearing my talus.
Yes.
Look at the beautiful blue
nice
string
blue
there.
You got there.
And if you haven't gotten your blue string yet, check out Tchelet, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T .com. Put in a coupon code Yishai and get 5% off. We're working on more right now, okay? Still, and also let me know how that company is doing for you.
Well, Tchelet Tzitzit are not so cheap, so 5% is money.
Right. It's definitely money, and it's awesome. And, like, you got the coupon code for a mitzvah. Imagine if God was like, and type in coupon code, God loves you. All right. and also, I want to thank the good folks at the Land of Israel Network for being so Land of Israel networky and really sending out the net waves to the world of our broadcast and the other great shows on this network, which is thelandofisrael.com. We were recently at the Farm Mega Center in the Judean Desert Mountains, and it
little
was
little oasis they got going on over there.
Woo-wee! What an oasis!
Yeah, it's nice.
It's a god's.
It's
little,
a tourist site now, also. Yeah, except site. There's no tourists to come to it.
That's right.
There are some though. They're called Israelis.
Yeah,
and they're also touring around.
Speaking of that, I wanna say Misha Berach.
Yeah.
And may God bless in the name of the forefathers and mothers, And really, amongst all the sick people in Israel, I want to bless everybody who needs healing, but also one of my favorite companies, El Al.
Yes.
I want to bless El Al.
It looks like El Al's going to be, what's it called?
Partially.
Where the country takes it over.
Well, it
nationalized.
It can be national. In the new deal that they're signing, can be nationalized if the country buys up the stock.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you know, I love El Al. I don't care. you know, I think they try hard. I think they have great. What are they called? Dialot v'dayalim. What are they? The people. Who...
Now that you said it in Hebrew, I can't think of it in English.
the staff on the bear plane, the service personnel.
I'm hyperventilating. Wait.
It'll come back. It'll come
stewards
back.
Stewards and stewardesses.
Steward personages, personal stewards, or whatever you want to call it. Stewards, not stewards. Stewards.
Stewart. Stewart's a name of a person. A lot of Jewish people from the 70s.
The airline, the air folks, the folks who walk around the airplane, take care of you. I think that they're great. And yes, El Al packs you in a little bit like a sardine.
Yeah,
and
they yell at you.
No, they don't yell at you anymore.
No?
No.
What do they do?
They don't. They're actually nicer than the other airlines.
Get out of here. I don't believe that for
I'm
a
telling
second.
You. I'm telling you. When we were younger, and that's like the moniker that the...
they were angry.
They were angry. No, the opposite. They're actually much nicer than United and the other folks.
Whoa. Plus, when you get in there, you know that every one of them is like Sayeret Matkal, and that they can take down any like problems that you have.
Yeah.
They can land the plane on one wheel. They can land you on a desert island. They can like negotiate a hostage situation. They're on top of everything.
I love El Al. El Al is the thing that El Al is like when you're like in some airport far away. And you get to that El Al counter.
Yeah.
And then you get to the El Al line of folks getting on the airplane. You're like, I'm in Israel.
Yeah. You already feel safe.
I'm in Israel. I am in Israel, you know? And it's just like when you're like at a, you're like in San Francisco or like in Washington, you walk into the Chabad house. You're like, you know, great. I'm in Chabad. You know, I'm here. I know exactly what the cake is going to taste like. And I know if I need to sleep there, I know what the blanket is going to feel like. So fluffy blanket. I know the whole thing, and I'm safe here under the Rebbe's wings, you know? And the same thing, when you're like in El Al, you're like, okay, I just made it to Israel. I made it home, even though I'm here in this foreign airport. Like I'm here with my brothers. And yeah, it's a little bit. You know, it's got the all the great sides of Israel and a few of the negative sides, but it's beautiful, and I really want to pray. Allah's been suffering very, very badly,
right? As so many other people have,
so many
people who are not as big corporations.
That's right. Tour guides and other people and all kinds of
terrible stuff. Our youngest son goes to kindergarten with a boy whose father is a tour guide specializing in Hungarian and Romanian tourists.
Right.
He ain't touring nobody. There's nobody.
No, he ain't touring nobody.
And it looks like it's going to be a while, too.
Yeah. It looks like it may be a long, long time, to quote a song. And the point is that, I do want to pray for, but see, the thing about El Al is, El Al is also Israel's national carrier,
right,
you know?
But so you don't have to pray overly for Israel's national carrier, because Israel could just take it over. Nationalize it. Why, you think they'll do a horrible job if they nationalize it?
You know, it's...
you like it as it is.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the idea of nationalization in general. I'm not a big fan of that, you know. I think that Israel, you know, the good things of Israel. Speaking of the good things of Israel, yesterday I was in Ashkelon. And there's a falafel place there. You know, and it's just one of
many countless.
No, but knowing good falafel places in the land of Israel is like the greatest thing.
It's true. It's a high level.
It's just a high level.
Everyone has their falafel place.
Yeah, and I've got like two. You know, I got that one in Ashkelon.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite towns. By the way, dear friends, if you want to have an adventure in history, just type in Ashkelon into Wikipedia. Or into Google and pull up the Wikipedia entry and read the history of Ashkelon. It's crazy.
A lot happened there.
You cannot believe the all the way from the Egyptians, and I'm talking about the ancient Egyptians before Israel came down to Egypt. We're talking about ancient times. It's an ancient port, burnt, destroyed. Simeon.
Simeon.
Yeah, that's how sometimes in the.
But you're talking about monkeys.
No, I was not. There was, but sometimes they say Shimon. They call him in like the in the Christian Bible, folks, they say Simeon. Anyway, lo chashuv, don't get too upset about Simeon. My point is that Shimon, like it says in Wikipedia, that he when he took control of it, there were like 70 witches that were living there, and he killed off 70 witches. All right, there's like so much history there, unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, in any case, the other falafel place that we love is the one we went to recently.
Yes, on Derech Beit Lechem. On Beit Lechem Street, Bethlehem Street in Jerusalem. Yeah, really good. We found a new place. And there's always the falafel cart. Is that still working outside the Moshav?
Yes. Yes, it's back.
It's really good. That's a really good falafel,
That's the airport one.
And then, of course, there's Ma'oz on King George Street.
Yes.
In Jerusalem.
That is a good one,
too. Which is really, really good. Yeah. Nom, 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 nom.
Wait a minute. It's a fast day. That's what we're talking about. That's what's happening here.
Falafel.
Yeah. Speaking of fast day, it's also a little bit slow for the people in Beitar Elite. Beitar Elite got shut down.
Shut down.
Got taken down.
They
to
had
Chinatown.
Like 280 new cases. They really had like an outbreak there.
Wow.
That is it's an interesting town because it is an ultra-Orthodox town, but it is located here in Judea, which is uncommon. Most of the towns in Judea and Samaria are like religious Zionists. Maybe you have to like be in like here to really understand the difference between that. Between what those different groups are, because there is a wide range of what a religious Jew is and what a Zionist is, and then you put that together. Anyway, but you have called Haredi Jews in Beitar,
which is in the end different brands within Orthodoxy, within Jewish observant people. There's different brands,
right? And of course, in every home also is there like micro shading of. You know, difference between what they think about this and what they think about that.
Right.
So, Beitar got shut down to Chinatown for 1 week.
Oh, man.
Okay, so that's already hard, right?
Which means, what does it mean, shut down? That means they're not coming
out? That means I don't think anyone's allowed to go in or out unless they have special permission, which happens.
Right.
Doctors, nurses, that kind of thing.
This affects us directly.
This affects us. Now, here in our town where we live... It's a religious Zionist town, not a Haredi town, but like so many of the grade school and kindergarten and preschool teachers and like helpers and stuff are from Beitar.
Right.
It turns out that a lot of ultra Orthodox women feel drawn to the calling of teaching and caring for children and things like that. So they work here. In this town.
I mean, just to give it a sense, there are buses.
There are like little vans, minivans.
And the van door opens up and
all these like nice Haredi women are streaming out ready to start another day of educating my religious Zionist child, which I'm so happy about. Yeah. I love them. And yeah. I'm like, that's sort of exactly what I'm looking for. When it comes to the education of young children.
Right. We want some hard Torah.
I like that. Get it in there. We want some Stup strong. Stuff it in while, yeah, while they're little.
We want some strong Torah.
Right. They can get their rough cook later. Like, get the... you know?
No, the town gives them lots of Zionism.
Yeah, you need the frumkite. I want the frumkite. So,
Maka, your Ashkenazis is coming out
There's nothing
strong
to do.
Today.
What am I, Sephardi? I don't even like cumin that much. That's the truth. I'm sorry to say it.
Maka, what are you saying? You know perfectly well that your husband is a quasi Sephardi.
No, I just sprinkle a little chili pepper flakes on stuff for you. Anyway, so like 80 teachers in this town, teachers, preschool teachers, etc., were not able to come into work because of this closure. And the town had to scramble to get replacements. I don't know where they got these replacements from.
Right.
But for the
second stringers.
Yeah. For the next week, like a huge percentage of caretakers are going to be switched out for alternates. Happens to be that Elazar's teacher, I guess, has like a parent in Jerusalem or something. And she's like staying at her parents' place.
Oh.
Or in some place in Jerusalem so that she can keep coming to work for the week.
Wow, wow, wow.
And I know that she has at least, she has a husband and a little baby.
Yeah.
So they're all like...
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right.
Making a sacrifice.
That's awesome stuff. And we're really so feel so blessed that you know, we get to broadcast with you, Malka, and to you out there wherever you are. a little bit of the light of Israel, the sense of what it's like to live in the land of Israel. And I just want to say, and we'll be talking about that next with Rabbi Mike as well, don't let this time overly, you know, mess up your mind.
No, it's too late.
No, don't let it confuse you too much and cause you to go down depressions and weirdness. You know, let's look at the good stuff. There's a lot of enemies out there. There's a lot of people that want to mess us up and mess us around. There's been now, you know, an article by Peter Beinart calling for Israel to become a state of all its citizens and thereby become a binational state and have the Arabs take over Israel. There was one. And there's other things out there that really can just flip you out. And I just say, I went to Ashkelon yesterday. I saw the beautiful sunset, you know, at this ancient town. I ate the ancient style falafel, you know, and I saw just the good people of Israel. And there's so much good that's happening right now. So many miracles. And I'm dedicated to making these 3 weeks, not just 3 weeks of remembering the destruction and the shame, as you say, and all these other, you know, feelings, but really towards rebuilding. And towards a reconnection of the Jewish people to the Torah, which really means more light to the world. And I just want to bless all of you out there to feel it and to be. Let's just have a light. Like the day of Shvasar Batamas was supposed to be the day that the godly Ten Commandments came down.
Right.
And that's the possibility of this day. And if you look at the keynote, which my good friend Yechiel Stein, who listens to this show every week.
Wow.
For years and years. So he's my brother from another mother, and I give him a lot of blessings.
Okay.
And he just pointed out to me, it says in today's keynote, in today's Lamentations, it says, V'tomar L'tzion Kuma, say to Zion, arise. And that was the organization that you and I started.
Right.
I started, and then you joined later on. So many years ago, we're still doing Kuma. We're still pushing that out. All right, folks. Rabbi Mike Foyer is next. In the meantime, write us an email, Yishai@YishaiFleisher.com or Yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Join me at YishaiFleisher.com and help keep the show going out free and widely dispersed. Put your money where your mouth is, where your ears are. And help us continue to broadcast to the world the amazing voice of Malka Fleischer, right?
Yes, melodious.
That's right. And we wish you lots of blessings from the land of blessings, and also remind you to connect to the source of it all, the root of it all, which is the fathers and the mothers, 1 hour south of Jerusalem in the beautiful town of Hebron, which I have the honor of being the international spokesman of. It's a great, great honor, and I only want to live up to that honor. Check out HebronFund.org. Help us continue to be strong down there in Hebron and continue to protect the tombs of the fathers and the mothers and the dream and the promise that was given to them. So let's make these 3 weeks an amazing 3 weeks. Stay tuned. More great stuff is on the way. Malka, thanks again. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Blessings from the land of blessings. Stay
only
tuned.
Health.
Only health, and we'll be right back.
This week on Rejuvenation with Eve Harrow, an exclusive interview with Israel's newest member of Knesset, Michal Kotler-Wunsch.
There are tens of thousands of Jews throughout the world. It doesn't matter for what reason. They are interested at this point in making Aliyah. And so another part of my own personal story as it affects my purpose or my role is to facilitate that.
That's Rejuvenation with Eve Harrow, every Tuesday on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.
All right, everybody, shalom, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting on the Land of Israel Network and here on my Facebook page and Twitter. Shalom and welcome to people from all over the world. We have a very fabulous and interesting discussion for you today about the Torah portion of Pinchas, which is really the story of biblical zealotry on the one hand, but also a love of the land of Israel and the next generation coming to power and heading into the land of Israel. And we also have a question about Corona depressions. Have you been feeling a little bit depressed? Have you been feeling a little bit weak?
Has your will been a little bit weak about a lot of stuff? Do you feel, I don't know, out of sorts and kind of not motivated for various reasons? We're going to discuss that phenomenon. And we have with us our beloved Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike, shalom and welcome.
Shalom, Yishai. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank God. I'm feeling a little...
It's like you were going to launch into an infomercial if you've been feeling depressed.
Yeah.
Call this number.
You know,
I was going to get a plug. Actually, I thought I was going to get a plug. In all honesty, I was waiting for the plug.
You can get a plug. What do you mean for your spiritual guidance? Is that what you're talking
spiritual
about?
Here it is. I've been having look at that.
There it is, right there. You can join Rabbi Mike Foyer for spiritual guidance at jewishstory.co. Reach out to him. He's a great person to help you think your life through better and get yourself a little bit more on the path of what you want to do in life. That reminds me, by the way, that there's a lot of people out there that are thinking about, due to the just weird changes of the world right now, are thinking about maybe making their dream come true, their spiritual counseling inner dream that they've had all their life, which is to live in the land of Israel. So I want to recommend everybody check out Nefesh Benefesh, nbn.org.il, which helps you make your dream of living in the land of Israel a reality. So you see, you could take steps to make yourself more alive.
I just want to throw out there, make sure you're not running away, you're running toward.
That's right, exactly.
Because life here is demanding, and it's fulfilling, and it's amazing, but it's not somewhere that you're going to take shelter. Don't run away. Run toward.
Right. Well, you will take some shelter.
No, of course. No, I mean, I had a full minyan with Musaf and Kriyas HaTorah on the morning of Yom Tov Pesach when my American friends were sheltering in place, and it was all on the porches. We were all sheltering. So I'm not, I don't want to downplay it.
It's interesting you say that because recently I've been doing a lot more jogging. It's summertime and I just enjoy it. And I'm always looking for good podcasts. And I listened to your whole series on the Six-Day War.
Oh, seven.
Which was seven.
You
got
to do seven on the 6 days, right?
That's right. The seventh day. And I listened to the whole thing and I really, really enjoyed it. There were some things that I really didn't know, including the whole story about the battle for the Syrian, the Golan Heights, and how that came about. I thought that was very interesting.
That's good news for me. If someone like yourself who's so informed, I'm still able to add. That's a good sign.
Yeah, there was a lot of the details of the political decision making, which I didn't know about, which were very important to me. But one of the things that you mentioned, which I kind of wanted to ask about, which is you said, look, there's different schools of thought about Israel. One of them is that Israel is a safe haven, and that's really what it's about, as opposed to a religious movement, or let's call it a messianic aspirational movement for a revolution in the world.
Even secular nationalists. There are three pieces. The safe haven is a thing unto itself.
Right.
Then there's secular nationalist homeland, and then there's the full-on, starry-eyed guys like you and I.
Right, but for me, like when I think about these things, safe haven is not a separate and inferior. It's just a part of it. I think of Israel as a safe haven. I don't deny that, and I don't want to run away from that. That is one of its variables, one of its important functions.
For sure, I have no argument with that. And anytime you make clean categories like that, people should always be skeptical. Life is more complicated, particularly when you're talking about idealities. Nonetheless, the reason I mentioned it is because the way in which we understand the purpose of the state in many ways will guide our behavior in how we try to orient it toward the future. And in particular, the question that I was speaking about, I guess, in that podcast was, if you saw Israel, the primary purpose was the safe haven, then the Six-Day War, at least in the immediate aftermath, like that was it. We're done. We achieved. We got a strong state. We just whooped our enemies. The whole world standing back going, yeah, like that's it. Like, and which opens up a huge question of whither our society.
Right. Right. Or what's next? What are we supposed to be doing?
Exactly. What's the point? We've been striving for 100 years, give or take, at that point. Right. And
Rabbi Mike, are you cutting out on us for a second there? Look, he's totally frozen in a most excited state. My gosh, it was the Six-Day War. It just blew him out of his just relaxed state, and he's just so excited. In the meantime, while we wait for Rabbi Mike Foyer to come back and rejoin us, I think he's coming back right now. I just want to say hi to all the folks around the world. We are friends in Cyprus. We have our friends. We lost you. We had you.
I just got. Yeah, that was. You know what that was? That was the NSA. They're after me.
I think it was actually you just got so excited that it overpowered the system. You fried the wires.
It's the Turkish coffee.
L'chaim to the Turkish coffee. I also had some Turkish mixed in with some instant. I like to mix them a little bit because
we'll talk about that later.
I'll explain to you the theory. The theory is like Advil and Tylenol. Do you know? They work on different things.
The painkiller cocktail. I understand.
And so like these coffees, they work on different coffee receptors in the brain. That's my scientific research.
Kind of like barbiturates and Arak. They're going to take down different parts of the brain.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's the wrong. I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue. But in any case, that was a joke. Quote from movie. Okay. Speaking of that, about really getting yourself an upper, there's a lot of people out there who are suffering right now from a sense of depression, a sense of, I wouldn't even call depression. I think people are out of sorts.
Yeah, there's an idea shoot. Like, it's kind of like I lack the English words for it, which is unfortunate since it's my native language. There's a sense of malaise.
Malaise.
Ennui. It's like,
It's not exactly ennui. I was thinking about that word because it's not like a kind of boredom. It's not coming from that. It's coming from being wrung out. Being tussled around.
Constant crisis is exhausting, man.
Constant crisis. Yeah, constant crisis is exhausting. And I think also we are creatures of habit, human beings. And when your habit becomes so unpredictable that you don't know how to form a habit anymore, you become weaker. You become weaker to...
Go back to your Aliyah point. I don't know if you remember... But also because your Hebrew was probably fairly decent when you came, this background. But it is physically exhausting to move to a country where you don't speak the language. You do not realize how much energy goes into reading the street signs, walking into a grocery store where you don't know what is on the shelves or where it's placed. I mean, stuff that like you're saying, it's not just habit. You've learned to manage your energy in the life which you live in a way which is efficient. You uproot that. And it's not just a mental weakness. There's a physical weakness that comes from waking up every morning and figuring out, like, wait, what am I going to do with the kids today? How am I going to find the time to work? Like, what? You hear what I'm saying? There's the emotional side, but there's a very physical side, which, by the by, is half the battle in terms of combating it. Like, physical discipline.
Yesterday, I went to a friend of mine was having a fire sale of his stuff because he was in the short-term rental business. And had a leading short-term rental hotel in one giant building in Jerusalem. And this business just died. Ooh. Just plain died because people were coming. So he was selling off chairs. He was selling off his stuff. And so like I thought to myself, gosh, there's a friend of mine who like had a habit and he had built up a very successful short-term rental, basically a hotel in nice apartments in Jerusalem, which was top-rated on TripAdvisor, and just
it's heartbreaking.
It just went down. It just simply went down. It just had to stop. And you know, not all of us like your business in education at the Pardes Institute. It keeps going on Zoom and all that.
Yeah, thank God.
I have a friend who is an electrician who puts in fans. He hasn't stopped working at all.
I bet he's getting the, you know, yeah. It's getting everybody spun around.
Well, people aren't going to put in. They're not going to do a house, like they're not going to spend 200,000, you know, shekel or $50,000 on redoing the house. But they will put in a $500
ceiling
fan. Yeah,
for sure.
So some people are working and some people are not. And just there's starting to be articles about this malaise. Personally, for me. What knocked me over the edge recently was the sovereignty issue. So I was just hot on a political issue and I was like, yes, 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 yes. And suddenly it was like, yeah, it just didn't happen kind of.
And in such an icky, disappointing, embarrassing way. Can we just say that?
Well, I even wrote about that and you know what? The steam came out of me and my steam for like, just whatever for, and I had a few days just kind of laying around in bed and this and that. And Interestingly enough, I found a book by the I forgot his name. Is it Scott Adams, the author of Dilbert, the cartoon?
Uh-huh. I mean, and Scott Adams. Yeah, I know Dilbert.
And he writes in this book. He writes, you should always be studying psychology throughout your whole life. So I was like, I am interested. And he listed all these cognitive biases that a person's supposed to know about. And I just started actually sinking my teeth into, instead of the news and other things, just an interest of mine, which is cognitive bias, just to understand some of the cognitive bias. For example, anchor bias, in which you basically, the first fact that you hear or the first number that you hear anchors your thinking about the rest. It's a bias. It's a bias. So
it's the way our brain works.
Right. And I, the only reason I'm saying that is that the way I kind of got out of a certain malaise is by saying, okay, you know, there's something outside of the world that I was used to that was making me, you know, was wringing me out that I want to pursue and think about.
Yeah.
What other advice do you have for people to kind of break out of malaise? And I'd love to hear in the comments section if you've been feeling any malaise as well.
So, I mean, there's a couple of things that come to mind. One is kind of a conceptual frame, and the others are more practical. I'll start with the conceptual. Just that one of the real challenges I think that 2020 has presented us all is a feeling of a loss of agency, right? That suddenly, like, this thing called the pandemic, the COVID, it's so big, and like, what am I supposed to do about it? Okay, to some degree, like, okay, the mask and the not mask and the sheltering, but on some level, it's so big, and the media is playing a real job in, you know, expanding that. So add to that, you know, the sort of crazy pool of people that's happening in America. Add to that the sovereignty thing. I mean, you have more agency than 99.9% of the people in that question, and even you feel like, in the end of the day, the other people just did this, and all my efforts went for naught. You know, here's some, like, people like myself, or, you know, unemployment. You know, all these people have lost their job through no fault of their own. It's very important to remember that. There's so many judgments internally and societally about unemployment but what we're facing right now, when you're talking about millions of people, tens of millions across the globe, that's just structural. So on one hand, that makes it worse. On the other hand, it also opens a window for psychologically where the work is to be done. So, like, in the frame, that the challenge, I think a lot of that malaise and that the mild depression comes from a sense of loss of agency. What can I really do about it? And so I'm going to waste my energy struggling. If the tide is so strong and the waves are so big, just, you know. So I would say that the solution comes on two fronts. Discipline breeds discipline. You make commitments to yourself and you keep them. In the same way every parent knows that the way to build a relationship with your child is to make promises and keep them, and the way to undermine it is the opposite. So something like physical exercise.
So you're saying routine, a disciplined routine will get you back to an anchor, a good kind of anchor.
Experience of agency. I can do. And it restores a sense that okay, the situation around me is madness, but I myself, to the extent that I can do, I haven't lost my selfhood. Right. I haven't lost my ability to act. I may be constrained by the. That's one piece. The other piece, that's a very simplistic presentation. The other piece is the macro, which is what you already mentioned, is on some level you have to step outside of the limited picture, right? And however that works for you. For some people, it's thinking about God and expanding out to the divine. For some people, it's, you know, understanding history and saying, like, listen, in the arc of things where we are right now, will change, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you could fill it in, but stepping out, you know, the hallmark of clinical depression. And I want to say this now, if people feel that they are unable to step out of the situation they're in and that the darkness is closing, get help now. It is a real thing. It's a dangerous thing. And it's something which can be helped, and you deserve that help. Do not question that. Act now. Better to act now than to question yourself. Mm-hmm. And one of the hallmarks, if you're wondering, is true clinical depression. One of the hallmarks, not all of them, but is that you lose sight of the fact that there's anything outside of the situation in which you feel.
Right.
That there's ever any happiness outside of your sadness, that there's ever any future outside of your immediate all-consuming present, you know, in the same way. And you know, that's on one level, like, that's how I got over my feeling of shame and disappointment with the sovereignty thing, which is okay. We biffed this round.
Right.
But the Rabbanu Sha'olam is in a 10-round fight here. We're like, okay. You know,
I agree with that. And you win, and sometimes you lose, and that's okay. Yep. and it's going to keep moving forward.
Last piece of practical advice, and then I'll give it back to you, which is that don't fight how you feel.
Right. I was going to say exactly that. A certain amount of validation is important.
Yeah. Like at some level, like, yeah, I'm anxious. And by the way, naming it can be really helpful. I feel anxious. I feel sad. I feel scared. And just owning that, like, okay, that's how I feel. And the power of naming it is not just giving validation, like, well, it's generally how I feel. But if you say, I feel anxious, it's very different than saying, I am anxious. You know why? Because I am anxious means I am my anxiety. There's a one-to-one relationship. I feel anxious. I recognize, okay, that's what's happening to me right now, but it's not who I am.
Right.
So a few hours a day or two, whatever it is, I'll feel fine. And I remember, like a couple of days ago, I was okay. Right? It's very important to keep that sense of selfhood, which isn't consumed by the immediacy and very intense situation which we find ourselves. And I hate to say it, but I don't think it's going to get better all that soon. And that's why we need to start to prepare ourselves.
A related way to get out of yourself and to see the bigger picture and to cope is to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the act of laughing is very healing sometimes and can get you back on track. I myself oftentimes need to watch a little bit of a stand-up comedy. And today they have an amazing YouTube channel called Dry Bar Comedy, which is really clean in its effort is to be clean. And so it doesn't have curses and it doesn't have a lot of the stuff that I don't want my eyes or my soul to hear. And so I go to Dry Bar Comedy sometimes and I laugh it off and I do a little, I do a few minutes of laughing and you know, you're just like, okay, great. You know what I mean? And you laugh at yourself a little bit as well. And you laugh at the politics and you laugh at it all. And I think maybe we can come out of this period stronger internally, more ready for life's vicissitudes. But I will admit to you that I have been less productive in the last few weeks. And
like I said before, on some level you have to accept that. The flip side of accepting it is I'm a big believer in setting specific goals and working out a accountability process for oneself.
Right.
And finding the opportunity there. Last practical piece is it can be super helpful to reach out to help others. You know, it's a great way to feel a sense of agency. The small things that we can do to help people, whether it's volunteering, whether it's simply within one's family circle, whatever it is an important way to sort of regain that sense of grounded, centered self that is capable of acting even in a world in which many of the forces that play upon us are too large to affect.
Very good. Okay, so this leads us right into the next topic, which is, right, in the Jewish people, there's a story in the Torah portion that we're going to be reading this week, Torah portion of Pinchas in the book of Numbers, Bamidbar. We keep going from last week's very dramatic story that the Jewish people, that part of the Jewish people, the tribe of Shimon, and we actually learned through the numbers of how many of the tribe of Shimon are lost through this, that this was a very big event, a political event. That political event was that the tribe of Shimon had a leader, and that leader decided to go against Moses and his leadership and really the paradigm of a God-centered moral world by bringing a Midianite princess to the camp and having public man-woman relations really on display. I'm keeping in mind that this is a family channel. Yeah. And so I'm
wondering where we're going to go with that.
That's right. And so this was an act of exhibitionism. But it was also a great challenge, a frontal challenge, and a new challenge because it was a new generation. Mm-hmm. And the new generation was now coming into the land of Israel. Right before at the edge of the land of Israel, there's this challenge to really the whole kit and caboodle. The challenge is no longer Moses, you didn't bring us to the land or this and that. It's a much more fundamental challenge. Like, what is this whole stuff? What is this whole system of morality? That's not what we want. We want freedom. We want liberty. We want whatever we want.
And it's a spiritual rebellion on many levels.
Right. But like a rejection of it all, a total rejection, because the Jewish people, one of the cornerstones is family purity. and morality of that, not as opposed to licentiousness. This was an act of licentiousness by a leader, and it was a grave threat. Now here's the challenge, the bigger challenge, the now aged leadership, the now older leadership was just not equipped to deal with this, and there they are crying, and they're not capable to somehow speak to a new generation. They're incapable of that. Right. They're crying out there, but the crying is also, I think, a double crying. One is crying for what's gone bad, but the other one is we don't have agency anymore. We don't have the ability to deal with this. I don't know how to you know, and sometimes when you look, for example, at where some of the American Jewry is going today what are they called? If Not Now, and many other forms of some of the ideology that has become to some of our eyes very corrupt, very lost. You sometimes think to yourself, I don't know how to talk to them anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could connect with them anymore. I don't know if I'm there anymore to be able to speak to them. Maybe I belong to a generation that saw the Six-Day War, and therefore, you know, I'm still there or remember the Holocaust. They're not part of it. We don't have any joint language.
Yeah.
And so that's one part of it. Let's just focus on that for a second. What do you think about leadership that no longer is able to communicate with a generation?
So, I mean, then that leadership faces a choice, as always, when you're in a situation that's not compatible. It's accept or grow. Meaning, you can say, okay, it's not going to be me. I need to actually just pave the way for whomever is stepping forward, and hopefully you have a leadership that has been thinking about that, because one of the obligations of leadership is to create a situation in which they do become obsolete. It's one of the great challenges that we face here in our country right now. Is we've been blessed with tremendous leadership for decades, but right now we're experiencing a vacuum because part of that leadership has become bound up with ego, and paving the way for my own obsolescence is not what leaders do so easily.
Especially Jewish ones. Jewish ones are not great. They're not great groomers of the next leadership.
Okay, maybe I was particularly Jewish. You probably know more about it than I. But certainly, you know, if you look later in our parsha, which I guess we'll come to in detail, but just to note it now, that as soon as Moshe gets the final message, like, that's it, go up on the mountain, take your last look, the first thing he says to God is like, whoa, what about the next leader? Right. And it turns out, of course, it's Yehoshua, it's Joshua, who he's been cultivating all along. So that's one thing, is some of you have to just accept, okay, listen, I did my part. And even if I feel I didn't do everything I could, I'm only going to do damage by trying to force people into the context that I understand. The other option is then grow. Get out there, engage, craft a new language, challenge your own assumptions, question the frame, do whatever you need to do, but don't give up on the mission.
Right.
Right? And part of the painful sort of a scene that you're describing, which is, you know, it's in shot in the Torah, of the leadership outside of the tent of meeting weeping, is that paralysis.
Right.
They're not angry. They're not excited about the challenge. They're crying.
Right. And there's different kinds of crying, but to me, the way I read it is, this is a crying of like, I'm not equipped to deal with this anymore. This is a new generation.
Precisely, and that's why when the sort of plot unfolds at the end of last week's Parsha, and Pinchas comes, and, you know, the Midrash fills in a bit of the conversation, says, Moshe, you taught us the law in this case that you know, Haboil Aramith, Kanaim Pogin Boeth, you to have these intimate relationships with someone outside of Am Yisrael, so the zealot's job is to strike him down. And Moshe says back to him, well, the one who reads the content of the letter is the one who has to fulfill it.
Meaning to say, the one who remembers it, the one who has that recollection, that inner sense of connectivity to that law.
Who got the message.
Right.
Right. And that's also a hallmark of leadership, you know, but makom she'ein ish, in a place where there's no one to lead. So be that leader.
Right. And so Pinchas indeed does that, and he takes a spear and he rams through these two people engaged in this exhibitionism. And there's a lot of miracles, and Rashi says a lot of miracles happened.
Yep.
For Pinchas there, and then the plague stops, and then in this week's Torah portion, God says, he says, Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, he calmed, quelled my
stayed
anger,
my wrath.
Stayed my wrath from the children of Israel when he was zealous for me, or when he was zealous for my zealousness, right? Mm-hmm. Or when he, how should we say?
He channeled my zeal.
Right. But in today's language, we'd say he felt me. You feel me? Okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? He felt my anger and he took it out. And had it not been for him, things would have been much, much worse. I would have destroyed, says God, I would have destroyed the children of Israel in my rage, but he channeled my rage.
Yeah.
He channeled my rage.
And it's not just the rage, it's the kinah. And I want to take a minute, because this is a very dicey, but yet important quality that in the Torah and then ultimately in the Tanakh plays a particular role. I mean, kinah in modern Hebrew is usually translated as jealousy. You know, and the relationship between jealousy and zealotry, I think, is revealing it. Because in the end of the day, jealousy is about me. I'm jealous because you have something I want, or because you've achieved something I want. You hear it? It's the I. Zealotry is about something I am in service of. I'm zealous for the Lord. I'm zealous in my cause. He's a real zealot, meaning I'm all-consuming devotion. The mm-hmm. problem is that for most human beings, our psychology does not differentiate well between the two, right? And our experience of power and fulfillment that we receive from an all-consuming devotion becomes an end unto itself. And that's why the pages of history are written in blood with all the terrible things that zealotry has done. Nevertheless, we see here sometimes it's not only the right response, it's the only response. There's a purity and a clarity of whole devotion which transforms Pinchas. It's not just the situation that he stops. It's not even the divine wrath that he stays in that wonderful, you know, King James language. He himself is transformed by it. He becomes a Kohen. He becomes
a priest where he was not a priest previously, although he is one of the sons of Aaron, but the priesthood was given
specifically to Aaron, and he's not one of the sons of Aaron. He's one of the grandsons.
It
was given to Aaron and his sons, and then every subsequent child born. But he was already a grandson when that process was done.
Although I heard yesterday, I was listening to Rabbi Eric Levy, who said that I think he quoted the Ibn Ezra, who said he will have the high priests come from Pinchas.
Yeah, there's a machloket. Some people say the pshat is he was a priest, and then here, yes, his house was elevated to the high priesthood. Also, he got his own covenant.
Right.
And as we've spoken about many times, it's a covenant of peace.
Covenant of peace. Briti shalom. Now, you know, in today's language, and I think you talked about one of your shows, Brit Shalom is one of the, you know, organizations that represented ostensibly anything but the zealous attitude of Pinchas. Let's break it down simply. He takes a violent act and he kills two people, and he stays God's wrath, but God says, "A, don't touch him. You may now want to accuse him of wanton murder. You may now want to say that he killed the leader of a Jewish tribe. Where does he come off doing that? You know, maybe people have a right to do what they want. You could say whatever you want. I am giving him my signature." And my signature, ironically, is the signature of peace. But maybe here the word peace is not the correct translation. Maybe it would be more correct to say wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a lack of wholeness, of shalem, when this act was being perpetrated. And it actually destroyed the wholeness of the Jewish people, the wholeness of the family, the wholeness of the tribes. And so I'm giving him my covenant of wholeness. Thank you for bringing wholeness back.
Yeah, you know, the complexity of the relationship between peace and violence here is clearly intentional. This is one of those passages, like we've spoken about before with the so-called war wife, et cetera, that you know, people who are bothered by the fact that this bothers them don't understand what Torah is. It's supposed to bother you.
Right.
It should bother this whole situation. You know, sexual license, spiritual rebellion, double murder in the name of the Lord, and out of it comes peace. Like, wait, if that doesn't bother you, you're not paying attention.
Right.
You know, like, you know, and the priesthood. You know, like, So I think you're putting your finger on a very important sort of tension that runs through human experience and certainly through the story of Am Yisrael, which is, what is the relationship between violence and wholeness? Right there, and you know, it's become popular in certain sort of Western philosophical circles to assume that violence is always bad. That violence violence begets violence, the cycle of violence. You know, all the excuses people use to use violence in the name of good are really just power plays, etc. We've spoken a number of times about this postmodern worldview, which underpins things like intersectionality, which is that the world is about violence, and therefore there are only perpetrators and victims, and therefore you know evil by its accumulation of power and its ability to use violence. Whereas our story is a story of heroism, right? And a hero is someone who is able to use power in service of good. And now, the Bible is not, there are no perfect heroes in the Bible.
That's right? What makes them real.
And therefore, you have to understand that of course we understand that this Foucaultian analysis of violence and power is true. That's human psychology. Yeah, everybody's out for themselves. But that doesn't mean a human being is incapable of also being out for God or out for their fellow human, even if you don't want to go out for God, right? Or out just for a belief in something pure. So we're a messy people. And this is a classic case of failing forward. Remember, as you started, this is a story of failure on behalf of leadership. What should have happened here is Moshe and Yoshua should have gotten a grip on this situation just like they did every other time. And somehow it took them out at the knees. Right? And into that failure steps Pinchas, who says, okay, sometimes when things are falling apart, you got to make the bold move. And he does it. And I think that what God is pointing out is that the wholeness he brings into the world is through his devotion, even if I have to break it. By the way, remember, he doesn't know whether he'll be punished.
Right. And this is a very important point.
The other side of this equation. He does it anyway.
You know, Rabbi Mike, many years ago, I lived at Yeshiva University, but I went to school downtown. So I lived uptown and I went to school downtown. And Thursday nights, I would go to Rabbi Herschel Reichman's shiur on Shem Mishmuel. It was Thursday night at YU. It was Mishmar, but it was like Hasidic Mishmar. It was great stuff. And he really taught it. And I was like at law school and just went to YU Thursday night. It was just great. I'll never ever forget this. He taught us, the Shem Mishmuel asks a question. He says, what does it mean? You have to serve God with all of your heart, with all of your soul. And the rabbis say, even if they take your soul, right? You got to serve God even if they are willing to kill you. He's like, if you got killed in the service of God, you don't lose your soul. He's like, you lose maybe your life in this world, but you certainly don't lose your soul. He's like, so therefore, what does it mean with all of your soul? You're not serving him with all of your soul, because if you get killed in the service of God, you maybe even got elevated. So sure. He says, no. He says, with all of your soul is reserved for a few people who sometimes put even their soul on the line for God. And he says, people like Pinchas, who were going to be called a murderer and were going to go down in history as a bad person. He was willing to take that risk. And he gives other examples of people.
Pause on that for a second. Think about what Pinchas faced. He comes to Moshe in the Midrash and says, wait, you taught us this law. The conclusion Pinchas ought to draw from that is this law is apparently not applicable here.
Right.
If it were, Moshe would be doing it. Moshe doesn't say to him, you're right, get to it. Moshe says, well, if you read the message, you should fulfill its contents. What kind of answer is that? You know? And I think that the honest truth is that this was one of those moments in spiritual history where the future is simply unknown. And therefore, Reb Shlomo used to say that he wasn't afraid to give up on a piece of his own world to come for the sake of someone else's.
Say that again. We lost you a little bit. Say that again.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story. A teacher of mine who was a student of Reb Shlomo was once at Isabella Friedman Retreat Center. You know it?
No.
In the States, the big retreat center is used by everybody, but in particular, the home of a lot of the progressive movements.
Okay.
So he was checking out for something. He's an Orthodox guy, Orthodox rabbi even, you know, but they work with everybody. It's a wonderful place from what I've heard. And as he's leaving, someone comes running out and says, "Rabbi, Rabbi, will you be the 10th for a minyan? Someone needs to say Kaddish." So, you know, we say Chacham Einav Berush Sho, you know, he's no fool. He understands, wait a minute, at the Isabella Friedman Center, they need the 10th person for the minyan. What kind of minyan is this? Turns around, he says, sure. Goes in, sure enough, he looks around. It's an egalitarian minyan. There's, you know, five women, five men, Ichbeis, who knows. Stands there, person says Kaddish. They thank him, they walk off. So I asked him, I said, what were you thinking when you did that? I mean, you know, you facilitated it, perhaps even saying the name of God in vain. I mean, this is no small thing. And he said, I was able to find guidance from my teacher, which is Rav Shlomo Karlebach, who always said to me, I'm not afraid to give up on a portion of the world, my portion of the world to come for the sake of somebody else's. He said, what would have happened if the big Orthodox rabbi with the beard and the zeh said to that Jew, no, you don't matter. In the moment where they're trying to say Kaddish.
Right.
What would have happened to that person?
Right.
And he said, but what's most important is what Rabbi Shlomo was teaching you is don't kid yourself and think that I'm doing the right thing. I'm going to get some reward in heaven. No, you're taking a blow right now. You're taking it for the team and you need to realize it. And that's what Pinchas was doing in that moment. True, it worked out incredibly for him. But I don't think in any way that ever crossed his mind. And that's why what he did was right. If in any way he had considered that he would benefit from what he did it, he actually would have been a murderer. That's the irony. Mm-hmm. That's why halacha in the Jewish legal discourse, this case comes down in law. And the analysis is if a person has to ask whether this is the right thing to do, then the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, if I see someone acting as a zealot, I'm permitted to stop them. Because the assumption is people don't have the capacity to make that decision. So this is it's a very... it's a spiritual revolution of its own, what he achieved.
Yeah, and it's tough to actually get guidance from it, which is
be very careful. It's one of those abused stories in both directions,
right? You know? It's abused, or in a way, it's like how they don't study the Six-Day War at West Point because it's a little bit like too miraculous, too many things. It's hard for you to bring it down.
Yeah.
But I wanted to actually just for a second, I think we're running low on time for this, but just wanted to talk about there is a place inside of our lives. Forget now politics and killing people and all of that. Forget that for a second. Let's just put that to the side because that's a very heavy question about, you know, God's honor and all those kind of things. That's a big question and it's hard to right. It's a hard moment to analyze, and I guess you had to be there or you have to have that kind of personality. But is there a place for radicalism or zealotry in certain moments in life? Let's say I've got to lose that weight. I'm 100 and something pounds and I want to drop those 10, 20 pounds. Should I be a Pinchas about the way I, you know, eat the food or exercise?
Yeah.
How about this? How about learning Torah? Which we all know is a value, But how do I make sure that I do my daily Torah learning, which is something I think the ultra-Orthodox world does really very well, and it's they make that into a just an absolute value come hell or high water. I got to learn that my time in the day, and I got to meet my chavrut, and I got to do that work.
The key word there was absolute. Right, meaning, what I hear you asking is, where's the place for transcending all the calculus in my life? And just saying, you know what, it's true. I could give you all kinds of good reasons why I need to make a living, why I need to spend more time with my family, why I need to, I don't know, exercise, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all true, but Torah. You know, and therefore, I'm basically going to sacrifice on the altar of that value all these other things, right? And I think that level of mesirut nefesh, of self-sacrifice, is one of the most powerful and dangerous capacities that we all have. There's definitely a place for it. If you don't allow yourself, you know, you write. We're both content producers. On some level, if you don't allow yourself to be consumed by an idea, it'll never really find full voice. And there's nothing more painful to a creative person than an idea which never really finds voice. The ones that have never found voice at all Okay, so Ashivo Mashiach Tikkenu, we got time, right? But the ones that I kind of half-step, like, I gave some time, but I never really gave it my whole and it reached fruition. This is a tremendous pain that goes in the same way. My belief in Torah, my devotion to my family, like I remember in a parenting class that my wife and I took, and one of the most important things that we learned about being parents of teenagers is there needs to be a sign above your head that says available, and it needs to be lit 24/7. Mm-hmm. Now, I tell you freely that I have not yet managed to keep that sign on 24/7, but I see that when I have it on, even though most of the time it's ignored, it's just like a blinking neon light in the darkness. No, sorry. It works, but it has to be a complete commitment. It can't be, yeah, I'm available, but
right.
It doesn't work.
I guess what Zimri stands for is the breakdown as license and really the breakdown of discipline and of bonds that matter.
And Pinchas, structure.
Right. And Pinchas, in some way, is the commitment to push back on that feeling inside that wants to just binge watch on Netflix right now, whatever it is, and just says to you, no, you know what I mean? I know my higher calling, and I'm going to have that inner strength to overcome. And there is some inner strength in me, this Pinchas inside of me, that wants to overcome and be that person that I want to be.
I mean, Zimri is serving him his own desires. And Pinchas takes his entire future and puts it on an altar without any expectation he'll ever get it back in service of God.
Okay, so Pinchas is a new hero, shall we say, a new leader, a leader for the next generation, because we are about to enter. This is the generation that is now going to enter the land of Israel. We also are going to hear about Moses' impending death and his request, as you mentioned before, that there'll be a person that is going to be able to lead the people into the land of Israel, fight their fights, and really give this flock a shepherd. And God is going to give him. God's going to say, "This Joshua that you've groomed is indeed that person." And now you can get him ready for the task of leading the Jewish people. But there's yet another one group that is so important in this week's Torah portion of Pinchas, and that is the heroines of the end of the book, and that is the daughters of Tzlafchad, these five daughters of Tzlafchad who come to Moses and say, hey, you know, our father died in his sin. His sin was not one of the rebellions. He never rebelled against you in toto. Right. And therefore he should not be counted amongst the people who lose their inheritance in the land of Israel. Like Korach and like Datan and Aviram, our father was not like that. He sinned, but it was not one of these rebellious sins that eviscerates his right to the land of Israel. Give us that portion. There's no brothers to take his portion. Give us that portion. And according to Rabbi Eric Levy, the real question that Moses heard is, does our father's sin merit total erasure of rights to the land of Israel, or can we inherit his portion that he lost?
That's really interesting. I hear it even in the shot. I've never thought about that being the issue as opposed to this sort of technical inheritance issue, which is the simple read.
I have to tell you that Rabbi Eric Levy proved it pretty. I was very convinced because he really showed. And he showed other examples where basically he's like, inheritance law was already given. This wasn't a new law. It was already an inheritance law. But what was specific here was what they said, which is that our father was not of those sinners. Right. And basically his case had to be adjudicated. Now, here's where it's really interesting. There's a disagreement between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi, or Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, about who was their father, Tzlafchad. Right. Which was his sin? Was his sin that he was one of the wood choppers or gatherer? He was the wood chopper or gatherer, wood gatherer on the Sabbath. Right? Yeah, the Mekoshesh Etzim, the wood gatherer who desecrated the Sabbath and was killed for that sin? Or was he one of the, according to Rabbi Akiva, one of the Ma'apilim? Ma'apilim are the people who went into the land of Israel as against, after the sin of the spies,
when the Jewish people were rejected from going to the land of Israel, they rejected and then they were rejected from going to the land. There was a group of people who went without Moses, without the Ark of the Covenant, without God seemingly, to the land of Israel, but they were all stricken down and killed by the Amalekites and the Canaanites that were there, who came down and destroyed them. These are called the Ma'apilim. So there's a distinction. There's an argument between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi who this Tzlofchad was. But in any case, so you could say it like this. According to Rabbi Yossi, he was a Zionist. He missed the correct call when God said to go to the land of Israel, but he still wanted to be, you know, right, get in that land. But it was a sin, but it wasn't a bad sin. And then it didn't deserve total punishment.
Misguided enthusiasm.
Misguided enthusiasm, if you will. And the other one is, okay, he broke the Sabbath, but it wasn't a rebellion against God. He did it for his own reason. Some people even say that he had a good reason to do it, which is he wanted to show the Jewish people the importance of the Sabbath, and he was willing to die
on the team.
Take one for the team to show them how serious this was. But
that's a risky move.
risky move. But I want to say that both of those are sins of modern Zionism, which is that one is we're going to the land without Messiah, without religion, without God.
Not, here we come.
Here we're here. And the other one is, you know, the religious aspect, the Sabbath and all these things, they're not that important to us. We're the new Jew. Will you
no longer define us?
Right. You're not going to define us by the old ways and the old books and the old things. We're new. We're reborn. The pogroms and the Holocausts have forged us as strong Jews, which is not like those weak Jews. We're a new breed. In any case, one could say both of those sins were the sins of modern Zionism. And yet the answer that came back to the daughters of Tzlavchad is indeed you will inherit. You shall inherit this land. You will inherit.
That's very nice.
Yeah, that last part I figured out, but the first part, Rabbi Levy explained his explanation of the story. But when it all boils down, the very very boiled down version is there's these women, and they say we want the land of Israel, even though ostensibly it's not ours to inherit. We want it, and we want to ask Moses in the proper fashion and turn to God and ask him for us. And it's also,
go ahead. And you have to add the context of the ancient world. And one of the reasons that the Torah lists their names over and over again, and it gets such prominence, for women to step out of their normal role in the social fabric at this point in history and say, hey, we're going to buck the system right now because there's something right, which isn't right. It just adds so much fuel to the fire you're saying. It's because they realize how precious it was to actually have a portion in the land.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think about it, there's a lot of healing, a lot of healing. Pinchas is a healer. Joshua, like there's the break of Moses, the loss of Moses. That's like an impossible loss to take.
Yeah.
And then instead, you know, there's a Joshua that he's going to come and there's a healing there. And there's a healing from the great sin of the book of Numbers, which is the sin of the spies. The great healing of that is one from the tribe of Manasseh, who was one of the tribes that was not loyal to the land of Israel, not loyal to their forefather Joseph's admonition to bring his bones to the land of Israel. They were not faithful to that. Comes these five daughters, and they, you know, and in total proper fashion say, no, we desperately yearn for our portion in the land of Israel. And all these things are basically, you know, things of great healing and great hope. The Torah portion from there will go on to really list the holidays. In a sense, a lot of hope. Here's how you're going to run your society. Here's the calendar for your society.
Before you roll it out to the end, because I know I have to go momentarily, I want to make a connection that I just saw, I realized as you were speaking, between Benot Tzlofchad and Pinchas. And because in the end of the day, the purity of what the Benot Tzlofchad was about was it actually wasn't for them. Yeah, for sure, they wanted a portion of the land of Israel, but what do they say? Lama yigara Hashem Avinu mitoch mishpachto.
Right.
Like they said, this is our father. This is about our father. It's not about us. We're right, going into the land. We're going to get married. We'll make nice men. Whatever it is, we'll have our thing. But even in the same way that Pinchas understood that the full healing has to come in service of making it right for God, they want to just make it right for their father. And I think there's something very beautiful about that as a motivation.
Absolutely. Let's finish off. I know you're going right now. I just want to finish off the Pirkei Avot, the ethics of our father says Hakina'ah Hata'ava VaKavod Mutzein Et Ha'Adam Min Ha'Olam. The jealousy, the Hakina'ah, the jealousy, the wanton desire, and the self-aggrandizement, honor takes a person out of this world. And guess what? You could take those three words and you could turn them around. Like, the way to heal him is actually to use these words. Kina'ah, be jealous, to be zealous for God, right? Like Elijah the prophet.
Not about me.
It's
about God. Right.
Kano kineti l'Hashem Elokai. I was zealous for God. Ta'ava, we learned that God has ki'iva l'moshav lo. He has a yearning. He has a desire to have embodiment in these lower spheres. Help God embody his
intimate, a proper intimate relationship with us.
Mm-hmm. Amen. And then finally, kavod, mihu melech kavod. Honor, who is honored but the king of honor. So if you take these three things and just do exactly what you just said, like the daughters of Tzlavchad and like Pinchas, and make it about him and give him be zealous for him, give him a place in this lower world and give him the honor, that's the real healing for those sins that take us out of the world, is by bringing the real way to fix it is by bringing God into this world.
Amen.
Amen. Rabbi Mike Foyer, before you go, let's just put on your banner. I want everybody to check out your other show, JewishStory.co. And I even made a little Twitter video.
I saw it was great.
That was cool, right? Jogging and listening to your stories about the Six-Day War. That was great. So check out JewishStory.co with the other the Jewish Story podcast and also Rabbi Mike's spiritual healing and guidance counseling. So check that out, and it's available to you. Rabbi Mike Foyer, thank you so much for joining us today, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. It's always a pleasure. Bye, Yishai.
All right. Tada rabbi, Rabbi Mike. All right, folks. Thank you so much for being with me. Let's keep broadcasting together. All right. So here's my website, YishaiFleisher.com, and help me keep on making the show free and widely available by going to YishaiFleisher.com/donate. Makes a big difference when you believe in this podcast and in this broadcasting. And really, we're broadcasting Israel. We're broadcasting the story of Israel. Sometimes I reduce it to two words, broadcasting Israel. That's what we're doing. If you believe in broadcasting Israel, and if you believe in building Israel together, join me at YishaiFleisher.com. I also want to mention some of the other folks that are part of our show here. One is Tchelet. That's the, here I is. I'm holding up the Tchelet string. Tchelet, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T. It's the sky blue dye that comes from snails that we put on the four-cornered garments. If you go to their website, you could learn a lot about the mitzvah of Tchelet, and you could purchase for you or your family. It's an opportunity to bring a lost commandment back in the time of Revelation. Coupon code Yishai, and you're going to get, I think, 5% off. We're going to try to bump it up to 10% soon again because they had a big sale, so it was only 5%. But in any case, Tchelet.com, coupon code Yishai. And this one's for everyone, IsraelWines.com. I really believe that you should be having a L'chaim today. It's good for your health, but nothing is better for your health than having some Israeli wines to make a l'chaim on. So IsraWines.com. And here the coupon code Yishai will certainly get you 10% off. So check that out, IsraWines.com. I'm very proud of their a partnership for the show. And of course, the good folks at Hebron. My day job is being the spokesman for the Jewish community of Hebron, which is the folks who protect the tombs of the patriarchs and matriarchs. We are the knights of the Machpelah, of the tomb of the fathers and mothers. Visit us and support us, please, because when you're supporting us, you are supporting Father Abraham. HebronFund.org. It's just that easy, HebronFund.org. And very quickly, for the end of the show, I just want to say hi to all the friends that have joined us. Ratnawati is blessing us, I think from, I don't know exactly from where, but blessings to, he says, God bless Israel and his people. Erica, from Sweden, says Boker Tov. We have Boker Tovs and Shaloms from Cyprus, from Los Angeles, from my good friend Lou Weiss. And somebody's asking us, P.T. Rajan is asking us, please pray for my business, family business, finance, and ministry. Okay. There's people who need help. There's a lot of people out there that are asking for our support and our love. So let's pray for others. Look around for other people who are sick and need a little bit of your prayers. And let's do that. I'm praying for a lot of people these days. And Nino says, Shalom from Oxford. All right. Always good to hear from Oxford, from the good folks at Oxford. And my good friend Jake says, that was deep. Yasher koach. More strength to you. And that's what I want to end up with, saying more strength to you guys wherever you are. For those listening on the podcast, there's more parts, including the Malka Fleischer part of the show. So stay tuned for more great stuff. And write me an email, Yishai@YishaiFleischer.com, Yishai@thelandofisrael.com, or here on Facebook and Twitter. And says Golda, Shalom from New Zealand. So indeed, we have an international flavor to the show, and we have the great schut, the great merit, to be talking to people all over the world. I want to bless all of you wherever you are. Thank you so much for being part of the story. Thank you so much for blessing Zion, for blessing Judea and Samaria, for blessing the state of Israel, blessing Hebron and Jerusalem. And indeed, Zalmi says, good morning from Jerusalem. Glad to be here, first time since the corona lockdown. So welcome, Zalmi, to Yerushalayim. And I want to welcome all of you to Yerushalayim, wherever you are. Yerushalayim is with you, and you are with it. And more great stuff is on the way. So lots of love, blessings from the land of blessings, and shalom.
Hey everybody, this is Jeremy Gimpel. Have you heard about the Land of Israel Fellowship? We started about 1 month ago, and people from all over the world, 24 countries, have joined. We meet live every Sunday, and the video session is recorded and then broadcast to all the members. And it's an exclusive group. It's a group that's focused on learning. We're focused on praying together. We're focused on growing together. And it has been one of the biggest blessings in my life. And we have people from New Zealand to Australia, Alaska, Hawaii, Hong Kong, Jews, Christians. We have a Buddhist. We have one Muslim that's joined. We have people from so many different backgrounds, languages, and cultures. And we are literally creating a virtual house of prayer for all nations. And it is truly marvelous. And so if you want more information about that, please visit www.thelandofisrael.com/fellowship. And I would love to see you next Sunday.